We begin Perek Revi, the fourth chapter of Rambam Hilchis Yesodei HaTorah. At the end of chapter 3, the Rambam began exploring what he calls the Arba Yesodis, four elements, four components of matter, Esh, Ruach, Mayim, Afar, fire, air, or wind, water, and earth. So the Rambam says, Halacha Aleph, Arba gufim halalu. These four entities, these four bodies, shem esh v'ruach hamayim v'aretz, fire and air, water and earth, hem yisoidus kol hanivraim lamata min harakia. They are the building blocks, if you wish, or the foundations or fundamental components of all of the creations below the sky. V'chol sheyeh, me'odom u'mebehema, anything that exists, whether it's a human being, or a behema, an animal, all mammals, or oif, or birds, fowls, or remes, or crawling, creeping creatures, or dog, or fish, or tzemach, the world of plants, of vegetation, or matches, the world of metals, Vavonim Toivis or Margolius, precious stones or pearls, Ushar Avne Binyan or all other building stone, or Harim or mountains, or Gushe Afar or lumps of earth, clods of earth, Hakoil, all of them, Golman, Mechuba Marbo, you say the Salalu. The body of all these entities is a combination of these four elements. And as I mentioned, we should not confuse them with elements we talk about in chemistry. They speak about more than 100 elements, 107 elements, 110 elements, which has to do with the atomic understanding of modern-day chemistry. When we speak here about Yesodis, we're not talking about indivisible things that can't yet be devised and compartmentalized in many more details. I also mentioned, that's also number one, what's important to remember. Number two is important to remember, as we shall soon see, that these four elements are often today explained and associated with the four states of matter, which depends on the different ways that atoms combine to become the building blocks of matter, whether it's matter in the state of solid or liquid or gas or plasma, where matter is transformed into energy. So that's also another component to remember. Some have even associated it with the four components of positive, negative matter and antimatter. Nimtzu, so the Rambam says everything in our world is somehow comprised from these four states or four components or four elements or four dimensions or four qualities of Esh, Ruach, Mayim, Afar. Fire, air, wind, water, and earth. Nimtzu. This means kol hagufim shelamata min harakia. All of the bodies which are found below the sky, chutz me'arba yesodos halalu, with the exception of these very four quintessential bodies that he discussed at the end of last chapter, the Eish and the Ruach Mayim Afar, each one individually, with exception of them, mechuborim megoylam v'tzura. Everything else is a combination of matter. Goylam is matter, physical matter, and form, tzura. And what he means by form here and in the following halachas, as I mentioned in an earlier class, the word form is not referring to the physical shape. It's true, everything has a tzura, everything has a physical shape. Matter must have a tzura, whatever the form is. But here, when he's talking about form, he's referring to the entity's spiritual qualities. If you wish, the spiritual chemistry of it, the purpose of its existence, the divine or spiritual energy that is embedded in it, the inner spiritual qualities and energy that allows it to exist and allows for its functionality, from which all of its physical properties ultimately derive from and are a manifestation of. That's what he means by tzura, as he will make it clear soon. So everything has the goylem, the matter, and the tzura of it, its inner spiritual core, identity, meaning, purpose. The goylem shalahem mechuber marba yisaydus halalu. And when you talk about the matter, it's a combination of these four elements, eish ruach mayim afer. Aval kol echad marba yisaydus eina mechuber ele megoylem mitzura bulvat. However, when you talk about the elements themselves, these yesoides themselves, these fundamental components themselves, they're a combination of form and matter. Migoylem v'tzura bilvad, of form, which is tzura, they also have their spiritual qualities, and matter alone. Goylem, the way they exist, as we said yesterday, they used to call it chaymer hiyuli, in a hulian state. It's a very subtle form of matter, not the physical properties that we're accustomed to, that we grasp with our five senses, as the Rambam said at the end of the earlier chapter, that the goylem, the matter, from which is connected to Eish Ruach Mayim Ofer, is a different type of matter. It's not one that's made up of these four yesoides. Base. Derech ha'Eish v'haruach, liyas ma'alocham mimata mitabura aretz l'mayla klapi harakia. The tendency of fire and wind, or if you wish, gas, energy, is to ascend upwards from the depths of the earth. Tabura aretz is like the depth, the navel, so to speak, of the earth. Lamayla klapi arakiya, upwards towards the sky. Derech hamayim v'aretz, liyas malachim mitachas arakiya, lamata ad la'emtza. The tendency of water and earth, in contrast, is to descend from the sky to downward. Mitachasarakia, lamata, to go downward, ad la'emtza, to go to the midpoint of the sky, which is the center of the earth. What does he mean? She'emtza harakia hu amata she'en lamata memenu. Because the midpoint of the sky is the lowest point below which nothing is lower. What the Ramba means is, I know it sounds complicated, but don't get confused. What he means is, since he explained in the previous chapter, chapter 3, that the heavens are spherical, remember he spoke about the nine galgalim, the nine spheres, so to speak, the nine balls, if you wish, and in middle, suspended in middle, is earth. So anything past the midpoint of the earth can be considered to be higher when approaching it from the opposite side. So if you're going from this side of the ball and you go lower, 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 and you hit the midpoint of the earth and then you continue to go lower, you're going lower. But from the other perspective, you're already much higher than the midpoint of the earth. So what would be the mata? What would be the lowest? Mata she'en lamata emenu. What would that be? That would be the midpoint of the earth. That's what he's saying. You understand? Tabur ha'aretz, that's the midpoint of the earth. So he says the tendency of water and earth is to gravitate, to go downward, to descend from the sky to the midpoint of the sky. What do we mean the midpoint? If you look at it, it's a sphere. So from both sides, it's equal. So the midpoint would be the center of the earth. And that is the lowest point below which nothing is lower. Because if you go lower, you're also going higher from the other direction, from the opposite side. So there's the big difference between Eish and Ruach and Mayim and Ofer in terms of tendency. Eish and Ruach are gravitating upwards. Mayim and Ofer are gravitating downwards. Mayim, the liquid, flows downward, and Ofer as well goes downward. Eish and Ruach, they tend to go upward. There's a difference between each of those two categories themselves, as we will see, but this is a general distinction that the Rambam makes. Ve'ein hiluchem loy bedaitem v'loy bechefzem elaminik shenikva behen v'teva shenitva behen. The natural characteristics of fire, or these natural, this tendency, is not a conscious matter. It's not willful. In other words, it's not that there is a conscious awareness and desire that this is how I want to behave. What is it? He says it's a pattern that's affixed within them. It's the nature that they were given. No, it's there. It's the code that has been transcribed into them based on their physical composition, physical chemistry. Teva ha'esh, the natural characteristic of fire is that it's cham v'yavish. It's warm and it's dry. V'hu kal mikulam. It's the lightest of all of these four elements. Haruach, wind or gaz or air. Cham v'lach is warm and moist. So fire, he said, is warm, but it's dry. Ruach, he says, is warm, but there's moist. Mayim, water, is karim velachim, cold and moist. And eretz, and earth, is yavesha vekara. It's dry and it's cold. Vehi kvedim ikulam, it's the heaviest of all the four. Vahamayim kalim imena, water is lighter than earth. Lefichach nimtzayim lamayla laretz. Therefore, it's found above the earth. Vaharuach kalmin hamayim, the wind is lighter than water. Lefichach umirachav apnei hamayim, therefore it hovers above the water. Vahaesh kalmin haruach, and fire is even lighter than the wind. So therefore the Rambam says, you have Esh, which is the lightest, then you have the Ruach, you have the Mayim, the Ofer. Ofer is the heaviest, and therefore it's on the bottom. The water is lighter, it's above it. Above it is the Ruach, the wind, the air, and above it is the fire. This is what he's going to say now. And since we said that these are basically the dimensions that are the building blocks and part of the bodies of everything below the sky, yimotze kol guf v'guf. This means that every single body, may Adam, whether a human being, behema, an animal, chaya would be a beast, an undomesticated animal, oif, bird, fowl, dog, fish, tzemach, vegetation, matchis, metal, evan, stone, golmoy, its matter, it's physical matter, mechubar, me'esh, v'ruach, hamayim, v'ofer. It's a combination of fire, wind, water, and earth. In other words, in every single one of these beings, you can identify the quality of esh, ruach, mayim, and ofer. V'arbaton yis'arvu b'yachad. It doesn't mean that when you look at a person or you look at an animal, you see fire and you see wind. The four combined together, creating a compound, a cholent, yis'arvu b'yachad. The combination of these four, v'yishtanu kol echad mem be'isa erif. Each one goes through a transformation during this combination. In other words, the original element of esh, ruach, mayim, ofer, which are also not the physical, is not the physical properties of these four the way we see it on earth, as the Rambam made it very clear earlier. But when they go through this mixture, you have now a new entity. They all go through a change. So the combination of the four does not resemble any one as it exists alone. You can't compare the esh, the way it's alone, the way the esh becomes part of a mixture that ultimately becomes the state of matter, which has in it a manifestation of all these four. And the Rambam continues. Therefore, because of this, in any combination of them, there cannot be found even one portion of fire as it exists alone, or air as it exists alone, or water as it exists alone, or earth as it exists alone. Rather, they have all went through a transformation. They were all nishtana, and they became a single body, whatever the body it is, whether you're talking about metal, or you're talking about a rock, or you're talking about a bird, you're talking about a fish, you're talking about an insect, or you're talking about a human being. There is something called a human being, which is comprised of so many components, so many dimensions, so many elements, and you have in it a reflection of the concept of the Yisoid HaEsh, and the Yisoid HaRuach, and the Yisoid HaMayim, and the Yisoid HaOf. Each and every body, every guf, which is a combination of these four elements, will have a combination of cold and warmth, of moistness and dryness. The question is not if you have all four. You have within you cold and warmth. Why? Because you have within you esh, and you have within you ruach, and you have within you mayim, and you have within you ofer. So therefore you're going to have cold, and you're also going to have warmth. You're also going to have moistness, and you're going to have dryness. Why are you going to have moistness? Because you have in you mayim, and you have in you ruach. You'll also have dryness because you have in you esh, and you have in you ofer. So therefore everybody will have, everything and everybody will have all these four dimensions. There's coldness, there's warmth, there's the moist element, and there's the dry element. The question is, not if you have them, the question is which one is emphasized. However, there are some bodies which have a more powerful concentration of the element of fire. For example, he says creatures with living souls, what we would call balei nefesh chaya, those who have a living soul. So therefore, you will see by them a higher temperature, more heat, or if you want, more passion. Why? Because the element of Eish is very emphasized in these creatures. Yesh mehem gufim shebem chaskam yisayda aretz, k'may avonim lefichich yirabem ayyavish harpe. You will have some bodies in which there's a more concentrated focus, or there's a more powerful concentration of the element of earth. For example, stones. That's why they're very dry. You have some of them. The bodies have a greater concentration of the element of water, and therefore they are moist. You'll find one body which is warmer than another body, even though that body is also warm, but one body will be warmer than it. Or you'll have one body that's drier than another body, which is itself dry. But there's different levels of warmth or different levels of dryness. There are bodies in which cold alone is noticeable. And bodies, even though they have all four, but nonetheless, the quality of moistness is the most emphasized, and that's what you're going to notice. Vigufim, and then you'll have other bodies, Yera behen hakor v'hayoyvish ke'echad b'shava, in which what will appear equally, what will be equally noticeable is the quality of coldness and the quality of dryness. Oy hakor v'halach ke'echad b'shava. Or what will be equally noticeable is the quality of coldness and moist. Oy hachayim v'hayoyvish ke'echad b'shava. Or what will be equally emphasized and manifested in this body is warmth and dryness. Or warmth and moist, more or less in a uniform fashion. What is this based? Based on, according to the predominance of the element that is found in the combination and the building blocks of this creature, the inclination and nature of that element will be expressed in the body resulting from a mixture of all the elements. So it's true, there's a mixture, but the question is which one is more dominant and therefore expresses itself and is manifested in the characteristics and behavior of this particular creature. That's what he says, Reiv HaYisoid, which was in this mixture, will be manifested, it will be visible in the nature and the characteristics and the behavior of this body. Manifesting that primary Yisoid, which is the most emphatic in it. Gimel. V'chol ha-mechubemar b'yisoid ha-seilu hu-nifrit b'soif. Every entity, which is a combination of these four components, will ultimately decompose into them. We call it today the entropy principle. Yeshu nifrid lacha yamim achadim. Some will decompose after a few days. Yeshu nifrid lacha shanim rabbis. Others will decompose after many years. V'chol shen eschaber mem yefshe shalo yiparid lahen. It is impossible for everything which is a combination of them not to decompose into them. Ultimately, every single entity that is a combination of these four will ultimately decompose and go back to these four. There will be the decomposition, the disintegration. Afilu, hazava oidem. Even if you're talking about gold or ruby, it's impossible that they will not decompose and return to their fundamental elements. V'yashuv miktasi leish, miktasi lamayim, miktasi ruach, miktasi laretz. A portion will decompose, going back to the element of fire, and a portion back to water, and a portion back to air, and a portion back to earth. Since every entity will decompose and separate into these four foundational components, Why does the Ribbono Shel Olam tell Adam in Parshas Bereishis, you will return to earth, implying that he's going to return only to Afar? The answer is, Lefi Sheroiv Binyanim in Afar. Because the major part of the human being's physical composition is from Afar. Now, people ask here, the Rambam said in Halacha Beis, that those who have a Bali Nefesh Chaya, their primary element is fire. That's why you see in them heat and passion. But I don't think it's a contradiction, because the Rambam is talking about Reiv bin Yonai min ha'ofer. In Halacha Beis, he's talking about even animal life. He's talking about anything that has a living soul, a human being or an animal. Here he's talking about a human being, the human being's body, not the human being's soul. And we know Vayitzir Hashem Elokim es ha'adam ofer min ha'adama. Hashem created the first human being, his body, without his soul, ofer. The Rambam before was talking about Balei Nefesh Chaya, the influence of the soul on the living organism. Over there, there's a great quality of fire. Here he's talking about the body in and of itself, because remember, all the other animals, their body and souls were created together. By a human being, first the body was created alone, and then Hashem blew in the soul. Vayipach Bapav Nishmas Chayim, which is fascinating, that in a way, the animals were already created alive. The human being was not created alive. The human being's body was created just as a body, offer. And then Hashem blew in a soul into him. So in Halacha Beis, he's referring to even animals, anything that has a living soul, the element of Eish is very, very powerful there as a result of the living soul. There's an electricity, there's a passion, there's a warmth, there's a heat there. Talking about the human's body, he says, Roiv binyanim in offer. The body is also Eish Ruach Mayim offer, but the primary texture of it is connected to offer. In that sense, it's less refined of the animals. On the other hand, the soul of the human being is on a much higher level than the animal life force. And because the soul is so high, therefore it descended so low in a body that was created not even with any form of spiritual consciousness. So that's why Hashem says, I'll offer toshuv. But it doesn't mean only offer, because the primary element of the guf is offer. V'loi chol ha'nifsik she'yipasid miyad yachzol arba ha'yisoydus. Eli yipasid v'yachzol ha'davar achir v'davar achir l'davar achir v'soif ha'dvarim yachzol li'yisoydus v'nimtzu kol ha'dvarim chayzerin chalila. When we speak about entities that decompose, it doesn't mean that they immediately return to the four components of Eish Ruach Mayim Ofer. That's not what happens. It will decompose and change into another entity. That entity will decompose and change into another entity. And that will change into another entity, and so on and so forth, until ultimately it returns to these four dimensions. So all entities are constantly returning, are becoming, one is becoming something else, and that's becoming something else in this chain that pervades through our entire planet. That's what he says, Chayzrin Chalila, there's a cycle until it goes back ultimately to its fundamental state. Halacha hei. Arba yisaydis halalu mishtanim zelazet tamid b'chol yoyim u'b'chol shah. These four fundamental components are in a constant state of flux. Constantly. Every single day and every single hour. Miktsas and loikol gufan. When we say they're in a constant state of flux, a certain portion of them, not the entire matter, but the change is happening constantly. Part of it is constantly going through a change, every day and every hour. Ketzat. In other words, there is the decomposition where it's completely decomposed and it's transformed into something else. But he says besides that, there is also constant change. Ketzat. A portion of earth which is close to water changes, dissolves, and becomes water. A portion of water which is close to the wind changes, evaporates, and it becomes wind. A portion of the wind which is close to fire changes, goes through a metamorphosis and becomes fire. A portion of the fire which is close to the wind goes through a metamorphosis, changes, contracts, and becomes wind. The wind, which is close to the water, changes, contracts, and becomes water. And the water, which is close to the earth, changes, contracts, and becomes earth. This cycle of change proceeds little by little over the course of time. The entire fundamental element will never change. We're not going to say all the water will become wind, or all the wind will become fire. We will not say that. The water will never, you're not going to have all the water becoming wind or all the wind becoming fire, because it's impossible for the existence of one of the four fundamental elements to be nullified. Elamictus, yishtana me'esh liruach, miktus yishtana me'liruach le'esh. A portion of the fire will change to wind, a portion of the wind will change to fire. V'chein bein kol echad v'chaveri yimotzei hashinei bein arbaton v'chayzdus chalila la'olam. Similarly, between each pair of these four, change will go on in an unceasing, recurring cycle constantly. This change is always happening from Eish to Ruach, from Ruach to Mayim, Eish to Ofer, and so on and so forth. So the Rambam in Halacha Dalet and Halacha Hey told us two things. First of all matter, everything decomposes. Ultimately, it goes back to the Dalet Yesoides, but till that point, it goes through a tremendous amounts of changes and transformations and fluctuations and vicissitudes where it could, as he said, return, decompose and change into another entity and another entity and another entity. And the cycle never, ever stops. And today, you know, there's, of course, tremendous research done on this, how we see the incredible components, how everything is in a cycle. You know, you have the food cycle, the food chain, and the food web, and the balance, the delicate balance of our ecosystem. But everything gives and everything takes, and I give to you, and then I become part of you and you become part of me and we all become part of each other. Everything is connected. You know, we look at the whole water system in our planet, just one example. So the sun acts like a pump, and as the vapor of the water, it evaporates the water and part of the water goes up and it becomes a gas. That's a classic example of this type of change, of this type of transformation. Ultimately, it goes up, it forms clouds, and then with the change of temperature, particles of water emerge, and then they come back down. We get back the water that the sun took from us. We get back that same water. The wind scatters the clouds, and that way, the world planet is not a desert everywhere because it rains in so many places, so it becomes fertile. So everything, literally everything, gives and takes. And the corpse of an animal, it becomes nutrients for the soil, which then can produce what it produces, which then can ultimately feed that animal's descendants, that animal's offspring, or other animals. And so the chain constantly continues. And what we see here really is, and that's why that may be one of the reasons why the Rambam is so emphatic about this, because remember, the Rambam has one principle here. He wants to help the person can fulfill the mitzvah of Yediyas Hashem, of knowledge of the divine, awareness of the divine, love of the divine, and awe of the divine. When we see the unity of the planet, nobody lives in a vacuum. We all give and we all take. We all become part of one another. Every single one. The body passes away, is interned into the earth, decomposes. It didn't disappear. It just is transformed into other entities, which are then transformed into other entities. And in this, everything moves on, just like our genes, which are passed on all the way back to Adam and Chava. Everything moves and goes through fluctuations because there's really a unity. There's a singular symphony, a singular harmonious story that vibrates and plays through every leaf and every blade of grass and every trunk and every petal and every root and every seed, every grain of sand, every shrub, every bush, every insect, mammal, reptile, fish, metal, inorganic matter, organic matter, living organisms, lifeless entities, every molecule, every atom. There's a oneness. There's an achdus that pervades everything. And that's the eyes, the glasses, the Rambam is trying to help us cultivate, to be able to look at the world as a unified symphony, and everyone plays his or her part as an indispensable, important note in this cosmic divine symphony. And the Rambam continues, "Vishinui zeh yiyeh b'svivas ha-galgal." This cycle of change is caused by the revolution, by the movement, by the motion of the sphere. He's referring to the galgal hayoimi, that encompassing sphere, that invisible sphere that ultimately is responsible for so much of the motion in our universe. And as I mentioned yesterday in our question and answer session, every day we do a second video of questions and answers, and they could be found on the yeshiva.net. So yesterday we had a shiur in chapter 3, but then we had a whole segment of questions and answers. That the galgal here is not just, perhaps, that galgal hayomi, that invisible sphere, but really, our planet also runs with a galgal. Everything has the nucleus, and then that which orbits around the nucleus, like every single atom. So that model of the sphere, of the entity in which you have the nucleus and the orbit around it, is something that really represents the system of our world, how Hashem created our world, both in heaven and even in earth. So he says, "Besvivus hagalgal," as a result of the revolution of the sphere, the movements. And I find this very fascinating, because when we talk about chemistry, even in modern terms, everything is made up of building blocks, which we call atoms. The atoms, atom is a Greek word which means indivisible, because they used to think, you know, you cut an apple, at some point you have to stop cutting it. This was a big machloikis. The Rambam discusses it in the Nevuchim, the Rakat Shofar discusses this a lot. Is there something called an etzem that's indivisible? Atom means a core that's indivisible. That's what they believed. You can reach a point, and then it becomes indivisible. You can't cut the apple anymore. You touch the atom. Today we already know that the atom itself is divisible because it has particles. It's comprised of subatomic particles. We talk about neutrons, we talk about protons, we talk about electrons. And even that, perhaps, there's always more and more research. It's incredible. So the word atom really is not an accurate term. It's just a term for luxury. Atom means indivisible, but it's not really indivisible. But we know that everything, the building blocks of our world, is atomic structure. And the whole atomic structure is based on the galgal. It's based on those electrons that orbit, that rotate, that revolve around the nucleus of the atom. And the amount of protons, the amount of electrons that really, and the system within each atom, which is basically a system of galgal, of rotation, of gilgal, of rolling, of moving around, that is literally what is responsible for every single detail in our entire world. So it's just very interesting. The Rambam here is referring to the galgal that he spoke about yesterday, the heavenly sphere. But as I mentioned yesterday in the questions and answers section, don't dismiss this so easily, you know, as old models, because there is, this expression is very, very acute. So all these changes, Eish, Ruach, Mayim, Mafra, everything is going to flux through a flux. He says it's all besvivas hagalgal, because of the revolution of the sphere. Umisvivasa, from its revolution, Yischabru arbaton, v'yiyemen shar golmei bnei adam, v'nefesh chaya, v'tzemach ve'ven amatchas. Its revolution causes the four elements to combine and form the matter of humans, living beasts, plants, stones, and metals. V'hakel noisem l'chol goylem v'goylem tzura ru'uyoloyay de malach ha'asiri shi'atzura nekras ishim. Hashem gives each body the form, the spiritual soul, appropriate to it through the angels on the 10th level, which are called ishim. As we remember, in chapter 2, he spoke about 10 levels of angels, which are really 10 levels of spiritual energy. The highest one he called Chayas HaKadosh. The lowest one he called Ishim. These 10 are already mentioned in Zohar. Of course, they reflect in a very fascinating way the Kabbalistic doctrine of the 10 spheres, but that's a whole separate sugya. The lowest one is called Malachim Ishim. It's called Ishim. And he says, that surah, the surah of every single being in this world, not the matter. The matter is Dalad Yesoidus. The tzura comes through the malachim, through the evolution, spiritual evolution of the malachim called Ishim, which imbues it with its own spiritual consciousness, spiritual chemistry, spiritual qualities and characteristics. La'oil Zayin. La'oilam eina teraya goylam beloy tzura, a tzura beloy goylam. You will never see matter without form or form without matter. Every entity in this world has physical matter and a spiritual life force, but the two cannot be separated from each other. Matter can't exist without its life force, nor can the life force be discerned by the human eye except through its expression in a body. So therefore, for us, the two are indivisible. There's no goylem without a tzura. There's no body without some form of electricity, some form of energy, some form of spiritual vibration that gives it its life force and gives it its inner purpose and meaning. It's basically the physicality is a manifestation of the divine will that it's there, and that is the inner gas or engine or battery or soul or electricity of matter. And of course, we cannot discern spiritual life forces without a body, so they always work together. It's the human mind, the human heart, that perceives through his own mind, and he understands that he's mechuber from a goylem and atzura. He appreciates that everything is a combination, beginning with him. He divides any guf, mechale guf anemtza bedaita. The human mind, when it looks at a guf, at anybody, he can perceive that there are two components. There's the goylem, there's the physical matter, and then there's the tzura, the spiritual form of it, the spiritual content of it. So it's the person who considers the bodies and makes this division through his consciousness. It's an interesting expression. The Rambam says, Leva Adam hu shemechalek guf hanimtza bedaita. When you look at it, there's no difference, but it's the human being, when he looks at it, when he observes it, the heart of the person, right, in its knowledge, in the knowledge of the person, he considers the bodies that are found, and he knows that they are a combination of goylem and surah. Leva Adam hu shemechalek guf hanimtza bedaita v'yedeya shomechubu megoylem v'tzurah. He doesn't just say Leva Adam hu shemechalek megoylem v'tzura. Shemechalek guf hanimtza bedaita v'yedeya shemechub megoylem v'tzura. V'yedeya, the person also knows sheyesham gufim shegolem mechubim arba yisaydus. V'gufim shegolem pashat v'enem mechubim rak megoylem echad. The person also knows that there are bodies whose matter is a combination of the four elements. Our physical world. He also knows that there are bodies whose matter is simple. It only contains one type of matter. And of course, he's referring to what? He's referring here to the spheres and the planets and the stars. In other words, the person can appreciate that matter in this world is made up of Eish Ruach Mayim Ofra. But there's another type of matter, and that's the matter in the heavenly realities, which is not made up of Eish Ruach Mayim Ofra. It's made up of Goylem Echad, one type of matter, as explained in chapter 3. That they are composed of a different type of matter from the creations in our world. V'hatsurais, a person can also understand, hatsurais she'en lem goylem, ein anirin la'ayin, ela be'ein ha'lev hein yiduyin, k'may she'adano adon ha'kol b'loi ri'is ayin. A person also understands that there are tsurais, there are forms that are only discernible to the human mind because you can't see them with your eyes. And those are the forms that have absolutely no matter. They have no matter whatsoever, and therefore they can't be seen with the eye. And of course he's referring to here the angels of chapter 2. They're spiritual beings without material bodies. So therefore our physical eyes cannot grasp their existence. Be'ein halev hein yiduin. How do we know them? We know them through, he calls it, the eye of the heart, the ein, the ayin, the vision of the heart. We can appreciate their existence just as we know about the existence of the master of everything, although we don't see him with our eyes. Nobody can say, I see God, I see a tree, I see a video camera, I see my finger, I see some of you here on the video, I see a mouse, I see a book. Because anybody could say, I see Hashem. No, because it's a type of, not because it doesn't exist, but because its existence is much deeper and grander and infinite. So that the human eye, with its physical limitations, my retina, my brain, cannot process this reality. So does it mean it doesn't exist? No, it means I need different tools and instruments to be able to identify its existence. So the Rambam says, we know that there's Adon HaKol. We know that there's a master of everything. And yet, I can't see it with my physical eye. Other instruments must be used in order to identify and discover and appreciate that reality. So the Rambam says, what we see with our eyes is only a Goylem and a Tzura together. And now, and even the Tzura we can't see with our eyes. We see the Goylem, and we understand from the Goylem there's a Tzura. By the way, now you know why. It's a little sad to say, but in the olden days in some schools, there were some teachers who would call their children a Goylem, right? It's a Goylem. A Goylem, what's a Goylem? Where did the word Goylem? My Rambam made a Goylem. Goylem means matter, matter. Form is what gives the Goylem its richness, its flavor, its quality. I don't mean its physical shape, but its inner purposefulness, the meaning of it, the content of it. It's a Goylem. We only see a Goylem. We can understand in the Goylem there's a Tzura. Because of that, we can make the distinction between the Goylem and the Tzura. We can make a distinction and understand that there could be a Tzura without a Goylem. And the Rambam says, this is how we can appreciate Hashem. Because Hashem is not a Goylem and He's also not a Tzura. He's the creator of the Goylem and the Tzura. But it's not because this reality doesn't exist, Chalil. It's because you need the proper tools to be able to touch on infinity, to touch the divine, to say, my eyes don't see it, my ears don't hear it. Thank God, God is not reduced to a reality that my eyes can see. My eyes don't even see all the colors. My ears can't even hear certain pitches of sounds. Why? Because the kelim, the vessels that my physical body possesses, can grasp those realities that lend themselves to the particular parameters and limitations of the vessels that grasp them. And therefore, when you're talking about a tzura, you need different qualities, different glasses, if you wish, to be able to appreciate its reality. A very classic example for this that doesn't come from me, it comes from the physicists, I think Heisenberg, he tells the story about a fisherman who decided he wants to find out how many fish exist in the Pacific. So he built this huge net and he put it down for a few weeks. He lowered it into the depths of the ocean. He lifted it up. Wow. And he found an incredible amount of fish that he was unaware of. And he came out with a declaration that in the Pacific Ocean, there are no fish that are smaller than 9 inches. It was, of course, the laughingstock of the world. But from his perspective, he was completely right. You know what the problem was? The holes in the net were 9 inches. So therefore, there were no fish that were smaller than 9 inches. The instruments that you use to discover reality will define the reality that you discover. So the Rambam says, this is where Ayin Halev comes in. The eye of the heart, the vision of the heart. Halachiches. Nefesh kol basar hi tzurasoi shenasan lo hakel. Here he says it. The soul of all flesh is the tzura which was given to it by Hashem. That's what we mean by tzura. Sometimes we say tzura is the physical form. He says that's not what I'm talking about. That's called tavnis or toyar. Tzura is referring to the nefesh kol basar, the inner soul in the living flesh, which is an animal as well. To some degrees, every tree, every shrub, every bush, every plant. But here he's calling it nefesh kol basar, the soul of every flesh. It can be an ant and a mosquito, an insect, a reptile, a fish, a bird, a mammal, a domesticated beast, an undomesticated beast. But the soul of every flesh, this is called its tzura. What do we mean by its tzura? Not just its physical matter, but its tzura means its inner core, its inner meaning, its inner purpose, or you, if you wish, the divine energy that creates it, vivifies it, animates it, and is at the core of all of the physical building blocks that make up this particular living organism. That's called your tzura. Hadas hayiseira mitzuya benafshe shel adam yitzura sa'adam hashalom bedaita. The unique dimension which is found in the human soul. Every animal has a soul. But the unique dimension that exists in the human soul, which he calls the Das HaYeseira, that unique ability for perceptiveness, for consciousness, human consciousness, for awareness, which we call the human consciousness, human cognitive abilities of discernment of consciousness, this is Tzuras HaAdam HaShalom B'Daitai. This is called the Tzura of a human being. The Tzura of a human being, HaShalom B'Daitai, who is wholesome in his Das. The Rambam is, of course, alluding to the fact that it could be a person who doesn't actualize this deeper dimension of the human soul. A person is just biologically alive. But this is the Tzura of a person who's Shalom B'Daitai, who's wholesome in his or her perception. In other words, the person who's striving and yearning to become that Adam, to have a Tzuras Adam. It's about this Tzura that the Torah states in Bereishis, Hashem says, let us make man in our image and in our likeness. The human being is made in Tzelem Elokim, in God's image. What does this mean? Kelaymar, what does this mean? Hashem says, let us make a human being in our image, meaning let's create a person who will have a tzura, who will have the inner potential and ability and drive to be able to discern reality that is not defined only in terms of physical matter. The person will be able to be a human being who can perceive, who can comprehend ideas, deos, that are not just about the physical matter that I can see with my five senses. For example, like the angels. We spoke about the angels who have a form without a body. The human being is not a form without a body, but the human being within a body, which makes him greater than the angels in some ways. The human being within a body can become comparable to the Malach in the sense that he can become aware, he is aware, he's connected to this idea of Tzura, to the inner consciousness of life, to the core of life, to the truth of life. Like the Malach, who is a Tzura without a Goylem, but the human being has that ability, until he can resemble them. The beautiful explanation of the Shalah, Rabbeinu Yeshaya Halevi Horowitz, the Shnei Luchos Abris. He was born in the 1500s, he passed away 1630. He was born in Prague, the Rav of Prague, Frankfurt in Germany, Yerushalayim, Tzvas, Tveria. He's buried in Tveria. 1630 he passed away. Rabbeinu Yeshaya Halevi Horowitz. So he writes, the Pasuk says Adam comes from the word Adama, because man was created from earth, like we learned before, Afar Ata, V'Afar Tashuv. He says, but Adamos has a different interpretation. There's an expression in Tanakh, Adama Le'Elyoin, from the word Doima. I'm going to reflect the higher reality, the divine reality. And every person has to choose, which Adam am I going to be? Will I be only an Adam of Adam, or will I be an Adam Adam la Elyon? Ve'eini oimer al tzuruzu anekeres la'inayim shi'apeh v'achoytim v'halusosoy sushar roshim aguf shazu toyar shma. He's not referring here, when we say Hashem says, let's make man in our image. What do you think he's referring to? He's not referring to the mouth, the nose, the cheeks, the remainder of the structure of the body. This is called toyar. This is not the Tzalmeinu Kidmuseinu of the person. You say, Nasa Adam Tzalmeinu Kidmuseinu, what does God, man, reflect God's image? He says his nose, his mouth, his cheeks. That's not what he's talking about. Don't reduce it only to that. That's called the Toya. Ve'eina ha-nefesh ha-matsuya l'chol nefesh chaya sheba oichel v'shoy samel d'maygr shemahara. Nor is he talking about only the consciousness and the soul that exists in every living flesh, which allows it to eat and allows it to drink and allows it to reproduce and allows it to feel and allows it to think. Here the Rambam is describing the soul existing in every animal, every living thing. It can eat, it can drink, it can reproduce, it can feel, and it can think. But that's not what we're talking about when we say Nasa Adam B'Tzalmeinu Kidmuseinu. Not only the physical qualities of the person matter, like the nose or the cheeks or the eyes, or even the spiritual soul, which he or she shares with all of the zoological species. Ela hadas sheitzuras hanefesh. Ubitzuras hanefesh akosim edar b'tzalmeinu kidmuseinu. We're referring here to the ability of das. This is the tzura of the nefesh of a person. This idea, the perceptiveness, the ability of a person to be able to go into the tzura of the world, or what the Chachmei HaMusar and Machshava call Hagboras HaTzura Al HaChomer, to be able to see the Chaymer from the perspective of Tzura, to be able to see in everything in the Goylem, the Tzura of the Goylem. This type of perception, this dimension of the human soul, this is the nefesh that he says, let's make man, b'tzalmeinu kidmuseinu, in which he will reflect our image, meaning the image of the divine reality and the manifestation of the divine reality, the malachim, which touches on the core of the energy and the spirituality of all matter. Upamim rabbi is tikari zayis hatzura nefesh v'ruach. Frequently, this tzur is called the nefesh or the ruach. A person has to be careful regarding these names because it's easy to make an error regarding them. Each name reveals its characteristics. So when you hear the name, you know what you're identifying. There's something called toyar, there's something called tzura, there's something called nefesh, there's something called ruach. So he says, sometimes we call this tzura the nefesh of the person or the ruach of the person, and you have to know the exact name and what it relates to in the context of what you're talking about. Tes. Ein tzuras hanefesh hazayis mechuberes min hayesoides kedei shetiparid lahem. This form of the soul of the person is not a combination of these four elements, and therefore it's not going to decompose into these four elements. Ve'einim mikoyach haneshama cheitei tzricha l'neshama k'mayish haneshama tzricha l'guf. Nor does it come from the neshama so that it would require the neshama as the neshama requires the body. Elamei'eis Hashem min hashamayim hi. Rather, this comes from Hashem. It comes from heaven. Meaning it is essentially a spiritual, transcendent, divine entity. What does the Rambam mean? It doesn't come from the four elements, so it won't decompose into them. It also doesn't come from the neshama that it needs a neshama like the neshama needs the body. What does he mean? The Rambam here is associating the dimension of the soul, which is associated with our physical functions. This the Rambam is calling neshama. Don't get confused, because very often in some books, neshama is higher than nefesh and ruach, but not in Rambam. In Rambam, nefesh and ruach refers to the tzuras Adam, and neshama refers to the soul, which is associated with the physical functions that an animal has. The animal eats, the animal drinks, the animal reproduces, the animal feels, the animal thinks. So therefore, the neshama gives the body life, and the body gives the neshama a means of expression within the world, because the neshama expresses itself through the guf. That's what he says, ha-neshama tzricha l'guf. But he says, we're not talking about that. We're not talking about just the life of the body, the electricity of the body. Here we're talking about the nefesh and the ruach, something that is divine, it comes from God. That's what he says. That this is actually a reflection, it's a gift. You could say everything comes from Hashem, that's true. So what does Mara mean? It means comes from Hashem. It says, Me'eis Hashem min hashamayim hi. It's essentially heavenly, it's transcendent, it's a reflection, it's an expression. If you wish, it's a spark of infinity. Or as the Mekabalim like to say, chelek eleikam mimal, like a fragment of the divine, so to speak. It's a reflection of Hashem's reality. Lefichach, kashi parid hagolim shumuchubim min hayesoides v'toyved haneshama neshainim etzuya eleim aguf utzricha laguf b'chol masa loytikaris hatzura hazois. Therefore, when the matter of the body, the physical body, which is a combination of the four components, decomposes, and the neshama ceases to exist, what do we mean by the neshama? The neshama exists only together with the body and requires the body for all of its deeds. We're defining here neshama simply as the life force of the body, the electricity, the biochemical dimension of the body. So therefore, it requires the body. That's what it is. It's just animating the body. So when the body is gone, it's also gone. He says when that happens, this tzura will not be cut off completely. L'fishenet tzurichil neshama b'maaseh. Because this form doesn't require the neshama, the physical life force, for its deeds. Ela yedas umasages adeis aprudus min aglamim v'yedas b'ri akol v'medes loylam loyl me'elam. It knows, it perceives, it comprehends. The deis aprudus min aglamim. The knowledge, the awareness, the truth, which is above matter. And it's aware of the Creator. And it exists forever. Hushama Shlaima b'chachmasai, about this, Shlaima said in his wisdom in Kehelas, Kehelis chapter 12. Vayashiv ha'afar el ha'aretz kishahaya v'aruach tashuv elalim asher nasana. The dust, the earth, will return to the earth as it originally was, and the ruach, the spirit of the human, will return to the God who imbued it in the body, who gave it to the person. Haruach tashuv el Elokim asher nasana, because it comes from Elokim. It's a direct manifestation, if you will, of a certain aspect of Elokim. I should, of course, emphasize, I mentioned this yesterday in our question and answer segment as well, the Arizal teaches that everything has a divine soul. And the truth is, everything is alive in some form or fashion, even if it's dead, because the atomic, the atom, is very much alive. You just, if you could see the atom and you see the dynamic vibrations, the movements, the speed, I mean, celebe de confrelich. You're dealing with incredible, incredible life in every single thing. And in that, there's a soul, a divine soul, a divine energy. Certainly every animal, every insect, every reptile, every fish, every bird, every mammal. There is a spiritual divine life force. But the Rambam here is talking about that which is conspicuous, that which is manifested in a very tangible sense. Here, there's a major distinction. That's why we speak about doimim, tzemeach, chai medaber. We don't say a metal is a human being, or a metal is an animal, or a vegetation is an animal. There is a hierarchy. There are four categories. Because from a manifested, revealed level, this is called doimim. Metal is doimim. It's silent. It's lifeless. Because the life force is completely concealed. On a manifest level, what is the soul of an animal? He calls it the neshama. It allows it to function as a physical being. And that includes sensation, as he says, feelings. It includes thoughts, the consciousness of an animal. It includes the ability of an animal to survive. That is its function, to try to live and survive and propagate and enhance its environment through these functionalities. The human being, in a manifested fashion, has this tzura, the spiritual dimension, the spiritual quality, the curiosity, the inquisitiveness, the search for transcendence, and the yearning and the ability to be able to perceive the oneness in all, the ability to perceive the truth within all of the matter. That's the tzura of the person. He says that doesn't die with the body. That cannot die with the body because it's not part of the body. It's a completely transcendent quality, which is divine. The human being is divine in that sense. The Rambam now gives the final summation to these chapters. Halacha Yud. Kol hadvarim ha'elu shedibarnu b'inyan zeh. Everything that we have explained in our discussions, kemar midlihem, are like a drop in the bucket. Mar is a drop and dli is a bucket. Udvarim ha'mukimhem. They are profound matters. Aval einam kinyan aymek pedek rishim v'sheni. Their depth does not approach the depth of the first two chapters. Why? The first two chapters spoke about Hashem, the creator. The second two chapters spoke about the world. That's different. Even though the world was created by Hashem and contains God's infinite wisdom, that's true. But nonetheless, you're talking about things that are much more tangible relative to the creator. So therefore, he says, it's deep, it's very deep, but it's of a different magnitude. It's the world of finiteness rather than the world of infinity. Which, by the way, will explain a very interesting thing. The Rambam says here in Halacha Yud that everything we said is kemar midli. It's a drop from a bucket, right? A drop from a bucket. At the end of Perek Beis in Halacha Yud Aleph, he says, everything I discussed in the last two chapters, one and two, is tipa menayam, is like a drop from the ocean, from the sea. Here, it's a drop from a bucket, and there it's tipa menayam. You see the difference? Why did he change? Because a drop from an ocean is not a drop from a bucket. Yam, Chazal call, is mayim shein lem soif. Obviously, it's a metaphor. It's water that's endless. Because our visible eye doesn't see the end. I'm looking at the Atlantic Ocean. I don't see the end of it. I know there's an end, but it's ein lem soif. A bucket, yesh lem soif. So that's where the Rambam, it's incredible to see his precision. When he says at the end of Perek Beis Halacha Yud Aleph, it's tipa menayam, it's a drop from the sea. Because he's talking about infinity. Can there even be a drop of infinity? Here he's talking about the world, the universe, which is pretty infinite from my perspective. But you're talking about the world, so he says it's kamar midli. It's like a drop from a bucket. It's easy to gloss over these things, but they're so meticulous about how he sums up the first two chapters and how he sums up the second two chapters, 3 and 4. Ubir kolelo advarim shebeperek shlishi uraviyu anikra ma'aseh bereishis. The explanation of all the ideas in chapter 3 and 4 is what we call ma'aseh bereishis, the work of creation, the secrets, the dynamics, the energy of creation. V'chein tzivu chachamim harishon. The sages of the early generations instructed chain dershin batvarim elu berabim elala adam echad ma'idin varim elu melamdi noisan. These matters should not be expounded upon in public. Rather, you should communicate it, but to a single individual. You share it with him. You teach it to him. What is the difference between Maisa Merkava, the secrets relating to the Creator, and the secrets relating to creation? Chapters 1, 2, chapters 3, 4. Inyan Maisa Merkava afilu le'echad en dershim by elim keino yechachem omevin midaitoy moistin le'edoshe aprakim. Or inyan Maisa Bereshus melamdin oise le'yachit afal pishenim mevin oise midaitoy or mediyem oise kol ma sheyachal leida midvarim elu. The difference is Maisa Merkava. You don't even expound upon even to a single individual unless that person is wise and capable of understanding and developing it. Then you can give him the fundamental points, empowering him to be able to continue the journey. When it comes to Maisa Bereshis, he says it's different. This you can teach to an individual, even though he's incapable of really comprehending it on his own, through his own powers and understanding. You could share it all with him. You can inform him about everything that he is, of course, capable of understanding about these matters. What do we care if you teach it publicly? If you could teach it to one person, teach it to everybody. The answer is, not every person has the vast knowledge necessary to grasp the interpretation and the explanation of these matters in a complete way. And therefore, you have to be discerning of who you talk about it, in what format you talk about it. So Rambam says, whenever you're talking barabim, a lot of people, it lacks that individual one-on-one relationship. These are things you really have to be able to speak to an individual to make sure that he or she really gets it. Even if they can't understand it on their own, it's ma'aseh bereishis. You could communicate it, you can teach it. But when you're just speaking to a rabbim, the Rambam says, you have to be careful because it could be perceived in erroneous fashions. Yud beis. Bizman shadim is boinim bedvarim eilu. When a person contemplates and meditates on all this, o makir kol abroim imalach v'galgal v'adam kayotze boi. V'yirach hachmas yishol HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chol hayitzurim v'chol abroim. When a person meditates on all of this and recognizes all of the creations and what is inside of them, from an angel, through a sphere and the planets and stars, down to a human being and everything else, the person comes to perceive the wisdom of Hashem vibrating, manifested in all of the creations and in all of existed beings. Moisif avala makam. This increases, it empowers, it motivates, it inspires yet a deeper love to Hashem. When one perceives infinity, one perceives chachmas habayre, one perceives the edelkeit, the oneness, the harmony, and the infinite depth of godliness that is manifested in the whole Bria on different levels, this creates a profound love. V'timtza nafshe v'yichma psoroi le'ev ha'mokem baruchu. V'tzitzma nafshe, his soul will thirst, and his flesh will long for love with the truth behind all of this, with the core behind all of this, with Hashem. V'yire v'yifchad mishiflusoi v'dalusoi v'kalusoi k'sheyarech atzmoi le'echad me'agufas ha'kadoshim ha'gdoilam. He will also stand in awe. There will be a tremendous sense of awe and reverence considering his humbleness, his lowliness, his baseness when he compares himself to one of these great and holy bodies. Now this is fascinating expression that the Rambam calls the heavenly spheres Gufois k'doshim g'doilim. I understand they're big. That I understand. The diameter of the sun is, 865,000 miles or so, give or take. I understand it's big, but he calls it Gufos Kedoshim. Holy bodies, holy bodies. When I look at heaven and I put my and I compare myself to it, there's a sense of awe, of reverence, of humility. And the reason he calls it Kedoshim is because he says that its matter is much more refined. And of course, because perhaps this is another manifestation of what I said in the introduction to chapter 3, that the Rambam was not just talking about physical science. That's not his whole discussion, Aristotelian physics. The Rambam may be talking about the spiritual science of the world, the spiritual physics of the world, using also physical metaphors, because he calls it Gufois HaKadoshim HaGdoilim. I'm not going to get into this right now, but in the works of Jewish philosophy, and especially Kabbalah, the Galgalim are seen as a manifestation of what the Arizal calls Igulim. Igulim. Igulim is one of the greatest spiritual secrets and ideas that permeates the teachings of Kabbalah, Chassidus, Machshava, the concept of Igulim, the Igulim, those balls, the Kadurim. But it's fascinating, the Rambam calls the planets, the stars, the spheres, he calls them Gufos Kedoshim. And when I see myself and I perceive, in verses, in contrast to the wisdom of God that's in the world, person simply feels such humility and such awe, especially, he says, when you see what's going on in the heavens. Especially when you compare yourself to the pure forms, which are separated from matter. They don't share a connection with matter like the angels. Person will find himself as a vessel that's filled with busha, with shame, with embarrassment, empty and lacking. In other words, David HaMelech's words that he spoke about chapter 2. How is it that this is the human being you celebrate? The person looks at his or her entity within the vastness even of our own planet, and then the vastness of the cosmos, even that which we can perceive with our physical eye. Never mind that which we can perceive with the eyes of our heart and of our mind. So there's a tremendous love, the Rambam says. I want to be connected to you. The infinity touches me. It triggers me. And then there's a tremendous, tremendous awe, reverence. I melt away in the sense of vast, seemingly insignificance and emptiness. Take a look at this. Chevra, you see this? This is a picture that was taken 30 years ago, 4 billion miles distant from Earth. You see the Earth? Reb Shalom, you see the Earth? This is a picture that was taken 4 billion miles away from our planet, from outer space. Voyager 1, 1990. NASA. Does anybody see planet Earth?
I see colors.
You see colors. You don't even see planet Earth. And that's just 4 billion miles, which is not so much. We have stars that are 4 billion or 20 billion light years away. And a light year is when you travel 186,000 miles per second. So 4 billion miles is not so far. Now, take a look at this picture, Chevra. Do you see the planet? You see planet Earth?
If you say it's Earth.
You see the white dot? You see the little pale white or blue dot? That's planet Earth, Chevra. And that's not from the perspective of an angel. This is just from the perspective of a satellite or a robot that's 4 billion light years away. This is not from the perspective of infinity. This is just from a significant distance. This is planet Earth, Rabbi Yisai. In this planet, you have everything that's going on for the last 5,780 years. All the righteous people, all the saints and all the sinners, all the wars and all the conflicts, all the violence and all the bloodshed, all the business and all the transactions, all the love and romance and relationships and scholarship and everything written and produced and everything we love each other for and we fight with each other. Everything, all the politics in the world from Adam until today. Look, look, look at it. It gives you perspective, no? It gives you perspective. This is what the Rambam is saying. Perspective. And now we come to the punchline. So what's the point of this? So I'm a kli mali busha kli mereg v'chaser. And now you think about the fact that the master of the world, the creator of the world, chose you and you and you and me living in this little tiny, almost invisible planet and says what you do matters. Your actions, your thoughts, and your words constitute the ultimate purpose of creation. What you do is of infinite significance. The whole halacha, which is going to be now, beginning with Perek Hei, the Rambam begins, halacha l'maisa of mitzvahs kiddush Hashem, the next segment. What's halacha? That this creator of the world gave a blueprint for behaving, for living life to the fullest on this little planet. So on my own, to say that I'm significant is a joke. Sometimes in conversations with people, they tell me, go and look at our planet from outer space to say that this is the purpose of creation. You have to be a lunatic. The Rambam acknowledges it. How can this be the purpose of creation? It's a joke. And this only makes us marvel because we see also scientifically that even though our planet is almost invisible, it's the only planet that supports life. They're desperately always trying to find life everywhere. Mars has a semblance of water, so they say, oh, maybe Mars once had life. Why are they so desperate? Because it's unbelievable that within this vast cosmos that is close to infinite or infinite, which our mind can't even see, you're dealing with billions and billions and billions and billions of light years and beyond. There's only one planet that supports life. The planet filled with water, our planet. How did that happen? What a weird mistake. Because this is the tachlis of the Bria. As the Pasuk says, Anoichi asisi eretz v'odam alea barasi. L'sakin oylem v'malchus shindalajit. The Rambam says, marvel, marvel, that the Ribbono shel Olam chose this planet and the human beings living on this planet to realize the ultimate purpose of creation, and through Torah we could become Adam Adama Le'elyon. The Rambam finishes the last halacha, Yud Gimel. V'inyanei arba prokim elu shebechamish mitzvus ha'elu. The concepts of these last four chapters, which concern five mitzvahs. Remember how we started Hilchis Yisrael De'Atayra? He decided with five, with many mitzvahs, and five of them were discussed. What were the five mitzvahs? Number one, to know that Hashem exists. Number two, to appreciate the fact that there's no other God outside of Him. Number three, liyachadai, to appreciate His oneness, His absolute unity and harmony. Number four, to love Him. Number five, to experience awe. That was the purpose of all these four prakim, to explain these five mitzvahs. This is what the sages of the early generations called pardes, like the Gemara speaks about the four people who entered into the pardes. Rabbi Akiva, Ben Azai, Ben Zayim, Elisha, Ben Avoya, Masechta Chagiga, Dav Tasvav. Second chapter of Chagiga, the story of Arba Nichnas. What did they go into? An orchard to eat grapes? No. It's they went into these four chapters of Rambam, Hilchos Yedidat Torah. They really went into it, delve into it. They became submerged in it. And even though they were great men of Israel and great sages, not all of them had the potential to really comprehend all of these matters in their totality, we know. Elisha ben Avuya cut himself off from his roots. Ben Azai passed away. Ben Zayma hitzitz v'nivga, he was deranged. Rabbi Akiva nichnas b'shalom v'yotza b'shalom. This was not a simple feat. V'ani yoyme, says the Rambam, I maintain. Shein royu l'tayil b'pardes ala mishnas malik resi lechem abasa. it's not proper for a person to take a stroll in the paradise in the orchard unless he has filled his stomach with bread and meat. Once you fill your stomach with bread and meat, then you go for a stroll in the paradise. What is bread and meat? It refers to the knowledge of that which is forbidden and that which is permitted, and similar matters concerning other mitzvahs, all of the details, what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is not good, etc. Even though the sages refer to this as a small matter, because the Chachamim say, the Gemara says in Sukkot Av Chavches, that Maisa Merkava, the works of the chariot, of the divine manifestations and angels, that's called Adavar Gadol. But Havayez da Abaya v'Rava, the debates of Abaya and Rava, that's called a davar katan, a small thing. The Gemara says about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was a student of Hillel HaZaken, a century before the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai observed the second Beis Hamikdash go up in flames. The Gemara says in Gittin. So the Gemara says, Lo hiniach davar gadol v'davar katan. He did not let go of a big thing or a small thing. Dover gadol ma'aser merkava, dover katan havias da abaya v'rava. So the Rambam says it's called a small thing. I say to you, says the Rambam, afal pikenu yinein lagdimon. Still, it's fitting for them to be given precedence, because they settle a human being's mind. They give your mind his yashvus. They settle the person. They give the person a settled foundation for life. Va'oid, furthermore, they, the halachas of Torah, havias da abaya v'rava, the meat and the bread, they are the great good which Hashem has granted to allow for a stable life in this world. To live an established, stable, healthy, good, normal, balanced, moral life in this world, allowing us to acquire life of the world to come. And the efshir sheyedam hakol katan v'gadol ish v'isha balrev rachav ubalev katzer, and they can be grasped in their totality by everybody, by the great and by the small, by women and by men. By people who have an expansive mind and heart, and by people who have a more limited mind and heart, but the bread and the meat and potatoes, the bread and the meat of Yiddishkeit, he says, this is always relatable to everybody at every age, and therefore I say, they take precedence over strolling in the garden. Now you might ask, so why does the Rambam begin Mishnah Torah with these four chapters? And the Rambam himself says in his introduction, when he goes through the mitzvahs, that the things he writes in Sefer Amada are the things that every person has to know first before anything else. He's not contradicting himself. The Rambam doesn't say, Ein roi li kones lepardes. He says, Ein roi letayel bepardes. You see the words of the Rambam? I say that it's not good to take a stroll. There's a difference. There's going into the orchard to take a couple of fruits. Letayel means you spend your afternoon walking around in leisure and comfort and relaxation. Of course, the Rambam wants everybody to know the first four chapters of the Torah. If not, he wouldn't open up his Mishnah Torah with it. And he says clearly, these are the things that everybody has to know, Tchilas Hakel in the beginning. To know Asadah B'Shefra of the Welt, to understand, to appreciate the basics of Hashem's existence, of Hashem's relationship with the world, of the meaning of the world, the significance of the world, the creation of the world, Ma'aser Merkava, Ma'aser Bereishis, Avos Hashem, Yiras Hashem, Achdus Hashem, Yedias Hashem. The Rambam says, L'tayel b'pardes, to take a scroll in the pardes, he says, this I say, first fill up your stomach with lechem and basar.